The first appeal we'll hear argument on is docket number 23-2201, Pelt v. Collins. Mr. Niles?
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. To assign the correct disability rating for hypertension, VA must address the veteran's historical pre-medication blood pressure readings. Here, the Board of Veterans' Appeals did not do this. It was the Veterans Court that addressed that in the first instance, despite this Court's repeated admonishments against the Veterans Court finding facts in the first instance. Mr. Pelt respectfully requests that this Court vacate the Veterans Court's decision and remand because, pursuant to this Court's precedents in Tadlock and Slaughter and Stinson and Deloach, such first-instance fact-finding is to be made by the Board.
And what is... But
didn't the Veterans Court consider the evidence that was on the record in making its decision? And maybe they alluded to other evidence, but wasn't that simply sort of a confirmatory observation?
Yes, but, Your Honor. Yes, the Veterans Court addressed at appendix page 4 the 10 pre-medication blood pressure readings that Mr. Pelt had and addressed it then at the initial brief before the Veterans Court, page 2. And they're in this appendix at page 27, 30, 33, 36, 39, 44, 48, and 50. Across the 7 visits, again, for medical care before the medication for the hypertension, with only 3 of those visits having 2 or more readings at once, as the diagnostic code 7101 first note alludes to. And yes, the Veterans Court made a finding that there is no reasonable possibility under one possible definition of the word predominantly, as it is used in VA's regulation for rating
hypertension. And if we were to conclude that is the only reasonable interpretation, then... Do you lose your case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So I also want to make sure I understand your understanding of your allegation that the Veterans Court engaged in impermissible fact-finding. My understanding is that there's no dispute over the identification of what readings, blood pressure readings, should be considered. Is that right? My understanding is your side presented to the Veterans Court 10 specific readings for the Veterans Court to consider.
Again, yes, but, Your Honor. Yes, Mr. Pelt presented the 10 readings, but segmented them into the 7 different visits, 3 of which had the 2 or more readings at the same time.
You're making a visits-based argument now about how to understand the diagnostic code. Did you make that argument below in front of the Veterans Court?
When Mr. Pelt moved for reconsideration before the Veterans Court, arguing the Veterans Court misunderstood or overlooked a point of fact or law, yes, at appendix pages 104 to 105.
But I thought the nature of the appeal was really more about this mode-based analysis, the mathematical mode, which of all the different readings of different values of the readings is the most common value.
That is the possible interpretation of predominantly that the Veterans Court latched onto and rejected and then
right.
Found...
Right, when you say they latched onto it, it was because that was what Mr. Pelt argued to the Veterans Court, right?
Mr. Pelt certainly highlighted that in his brief, but is of the position and consistently of the position, Your Honor, that ultimately this went to prejudice and... As, again, Mr. Pelt included in the motion to reconsideration, the Veterans Court had overlooked or misunderstood that there was more at play here than just 10 visits mathematical mode. Instead, what happened here was the board entirely failed to address these pre-medication readings. And when the board left that blank space...
The board noted that the examiner looked at those readings and concluded that there wasn't a predominant number of those readings that showed 100 or more diastolic pressure, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And for that examination to be adequate for adjudicative purposes, it had to comport with accepted medical practices and the facts of record. And so then, and part of the premise it has to adhere to then is what is the definition of predominantly? When VA asked the examiner, you know, is there a history here predominantly of diastolic readings 100 or more, if the examiner is answering that pursuant to the wrong legal definition, well, that's a bad exam. And so that then is a material issue for the board to address.
But you don't dispute that of the 10 readings, 10 separate readings of diastolic pressure, only 4 of them had a reading of 100 or more. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So a minority of the readings has 100 or more.
If the definition of predominantly requires looking reading by reading, as opposed to across the visits of at least one reading of 100 or more, or as Diagnostic Code 7101's first note focuses in on, just those visits with 2 or more readings, or as VA's own internal policy manual considers the issue for requiring that the readings be for diagnostic evaluation purposes.
On what basis should the readings be considered on a per-visit basis?
Diagnostic Code 7101's first note requires that the readings come from two or more readings at least 3 days. And so consistent with that text, then, it would be a reasonable interpretation that it goes visit, where you're looking for visits with 2 or more, and here you have 7 visits, 4 of which have a reading of 100 or greater, and then 4 of 7 as opposed to 4 of 10. The Veterans Court did not affirmatively interpret the term predominantly in this case, but instead rejected a possible interpretation of it, and the distinction matters because what was left then were issues that remained debatable. And so when the Veterans Court affirmed, even when those issues remained debatable, it overstepped Tadlock and Stinson 38 U.S.C. Section 7261C, which those cases interpret, and was acting beyond the scope of its statutory authority. And so with the board having left these issues unaddressed, the definition of predominantly, and the actual pre-medication readings, and the Veterans Court not having found against a reasonable possibility of success through each of them, what we're left with is, again, the Veterans Court overstepping in affirming the board error in not addressing those issues, filling that gap when those issues were not undebatable. And so, again, Mr. Pelt respectfully requests that this court vacate the Veterans Court's decision and remand, preferably with instructions for the Veterans Court to remand for the board to resolve these fact-based issues in the first instance.
Has Mr. Pelt been getting any other subsequent blood pressure readings?
He has, Your Honor, but Mr. Pelt is on continuous blood pressure medication, and the test under Diagnostic Code 7101, or the pertinent diagnostic criterion here, is it warrants a 10% rating so long as the veteran is on continuous blood pressure medication and before that, before the medication began, had a history of diastolic pressure of 100 or more.
I see. Okay.
I'd be happy to address any additional questions the panel has at this time.
That's fine.
Okay. Respectfully request the.
Let's hear from the government, and
thank you, Your Honor.
We'll save your extra time for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. In this case, both the VA examiner and the board looked at the objective medical evidence to conclude that Mr. Pelt's history of diastolic blood pressure was not predominantly 100 millimeters of mercury or more. The Veterans Court did not err in affirming that decision. Before the Veterans Court, Mr. Pelt directed this court's attention to 10 pre-medicated blood pressure readings. Now, the board and the VA examiner, did not explicitly list out those 10 blood pressure readings. But these blood pressure readings, undisputably, were before the VA examiner, they were before the board, and the VA examiner specifically stated that he was evaluating the entire medical record. Even if the VA examiner and the board erred by not listing these 10 blood pressure readings, the VA, the Veterans Court properly determined that this error was harmless. These readings undoubtedly show that Mr. Pelt's pre-medicated diastolic blood pressure is not 100 or more. Indeed, 6 out of 10 of these readings are below 100. And this is precisely the type of clear-cut issue that the doctrine of harmless error was intended to address.
Mr. Niles argues that the blood pressure reading should be considered on a per-visit basis. What's your reaction to that?
We would respectfully disagree with that interpretation. Diagnostic Code 7101 speaks in terms of blood pressure. It speaks in terms of blood pressure, and blood pressure is measured by readings, not by visits.
What is the implication of the statement in the rule that the readings must be taken at least 3 different visits?
The
visits are implicated somehow.
Sure, and that the purpose of that note is to reinforce the importance of getting a longitudinal analysis of the veteran's alleged hypertension, not just a snapshot at one visit. But even more, this interpretation of visits cuts against common sense. Everybody knows if you're struggling or potentially struggling with hypertension, a medical provider will never just do one reading and call it a day. There's a well-documented phenomena of the white coat syndrome, and so they will always do multiple readings. Well, they should typically do multiple readings in a single visit to check against the risk of white coat syndrome. But regardless, the clear text of 7101 speaks in terms of blood pressure and not visits. You measure blood pressure with blood pressure readings. But even so, even if this court this court doesn't have an occasion to consider the interpretation of 7101 or the meaning of predominant, even though the government's position is the only reasonable interpretation of that word, because the Veterans Court simply did not err when it looked at the blood pressure readings that Mr. Pelt himself put before the Veterans Court. It's important to remember the context of the Veterans Court decision. Mr. Pelt brought principally a reasons and basis challenge to the board's decision. Now, the Veterans Court could have simply looked at appendix page 99, which is the board's decision, and say, Mr. Pelt, the board considered the medical records and considered the factual findings, considered the examination results, and considered the VA examiner's evaluation of the medical records. That's sufficient, and we dismiss your appeal. Instead, what the Veterans Court did is entertain this predominance argument, spelled it out, perhaps to the benefit of the veteran to, you know, fully educate the issues and describe why they disagree with him. And now before this court, Mr. Pelt is challenging the Veterans Court's decision to fully explain their analysis to the veteran. And so we would suggest that Tadlock should not be read in a way that discourages the Veterans Court to look at the record and give these fulsome explanations when doing so is warranted. Nor should Tadlock be read in a way that encourages the Veterans Court to remand cases when there's no reason to remand. And in this case, there simply is no reason to remand this back to the board because as the Veterans Court decided or clarified, there is, quote, no reasonable possibility that analysis of these 10 blood pressure readings would alter the outcome. And that is that's the paradigm case of harmless error. There's simply no world in which spelling out and listing these 10 blood pressure readings would alter the outcome of this case.
What if the facts were a little different? What if Mr. Pelt had appealed to the Veterans Court and said, the board was wrong in saying I don't have a predominant number of blood pressure readings at 100 or more. They didn't really review my records properly. If you, Veterans Court, look at my records, you'll see it. And then the Veterans Court starts looking through all of his medical history files and then plucks out these 10 readings and says, okay, I'm going to now do the analysis of these 10 readings I found in your records. Would that be going too far? Because now that would be engaging in some kind of fact-finding?
And so just so I'm clear, Your Honor, does that imply that there's more than 10 readings and they selectively chose these 10?
We don't know.
So in that case, Your Honor, that may be the context that Tadlock discussed, where this is an issue open to debate. And because it's open to debate as to whether or not the readings are predominantly 100 or more, in that case, the Veterans Court should be very wary of making findings of fact in the first instance. 2 points on that. First, there is no finding of fact in the first instance here because the VA examiner clearly said as a factual matter that the pre-medication blood pressure readings are not 100 or more. That's at page 24 of the appendix. So there's already that factual finding.
Here's another question. What if, say, Mr. Pelt is a 70-year-old man and is the VA going to look at blood pressure readings going back 50 years to when he was 20 years old? And, you know, what if in his medical files there's 50 different blood pressure readings over 50 years? Are they going to look at all 50 of those and say, well, we need to find 26 readings that are at 100 or more in order to classify this person as someone with hypertension?
Well, under the Newhouse case, 947 F3rd 1302, there is a presumption that the finders of fact, in this case the VA examiners, do evaluate all the medical evidence before them. But this case is even a step beyond that because all the parties agree.
Right, but I think the concern I have is what is the VA's understanding of this predominantly 100 or more rule in the diagnostic code? Does it have to be 50 years of readings? You know, maybe when Mr. Pelt was in this hypothetical in his 20s and 30s, all of those readings are just irrelevant to the question. And so it's unfairly charging him with healthy readings back when he was a healthy young man in evaluating whether he has hypertension now.
Understood, Your Honor. And again, I think that would raise the scenario in Tadlock where this becomes open to debate. And so I think in that context, Your Honor, again,
this is not a fact-finding question. This is an understanding of how do you interpret the code. Like, you know, the history of diastolic pressure predominantly 100 or more. It's a technical matter. The patient that I'm talking about or the veteran that I'm talking about has 50 years worth of blood pressure readings. Are you really going to look at all of 50 years of those?
Well, when the VA examiner makes a determination on the disability benefits questionnaire that veteran with 50 years of medical history with blood pressure readings does not present with blood pressure of 100 or more predominantly, that is a finding of fact. That I think there's the presumption that finding of fact does take into account.
Is there
also
a time period to look at and apply this regulation for this code?
Well, there is retrospectively once the medication is taken, but in terms of pre-medication, I don't believe there is a time component to this regulation.
But there must be some kind of just general standard that the VA has to rely on relevant factual evidence.
There very well may be. I'm not familiar standing up here today to what that might be.
Because it's essentially, you know, evidence of what his condition is at the relevant time period, right?
Right.
Whether some, you know, kid who entered the Army at 20 had good blood pressure for 30 years is not medically relevant, is it, until much later. And when you're determining, and without a time period in the regulation, I assume that the RO and the board and the Veterans Court are going to require that it have a sound medical analysis and theory. And that may be only relevant in the last 5 years, in the last 2 years. I mean, obviously, everybody knows that some people develop blood pressure problems later in life. And so you certainly wouldn't discount those higher readings if just because somebody had blood pressure appropriate for their age in their 20s and 30s, would you?
No, Your Honor, and these would be the sorts of...
Let me give you a really stark hypothetical.
Sure.
You have a veteran who's age 50. From age 48 to 50, every single reading he had, and let's just assume there's like 20 of them, is over 100.
Sure.
But before that, from age 45 to 20, all of his readings were normal, and there were tons. You don't look at that whole time period and say, well, it's predominantly under 100, so no. You look at the most recent relevant ones and say, he has a pattern of over 100, right? But that's a factual finding that the RO and ultimately the boards are going to make, and it has to be supported by evidence.
Right, and I believe that would be evaluated under the clear error standard review by the Veterans Court, whether that medical finding is supported by the evidence and whether or not they...
And, I mean, in that hypothetical where every single reading for the last 2 years was over 100, but the ones before that were under 100, they found it wasn't predominantly over 100, that would probably be clear error, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm hesitant to comment,
no,
of course.
The government never wants to concede. It's just a hypothetical.
Sure.
I'm not going to hold you against it.
Understood, Your Honor. My impression is that would be certainly problematic, and that certainly wouldn't do the purpose of the VA, which is to provide benefits to those.
Right,
that,
because their whole point is to try to determine if this person actually has high blood pressure. And they do.
At that time. That's right, Your Honor.
Is there anything in the rule that would prevent the VA from, you know, looking back anytime a veteran comes in and claims high blood pressure, hypertension? The veteran could come in and say, here are my blood pressure readings for the past 2 months, and they're all of them are over 100. And what would prevent the VA from, in every case, defeating that claim by just saying, well, we're going to go back, and when you were in the service 25 years ago,
right,
you were fine, so you're not predominantly hypertense.
Perhaps what would prevent them from doing
some
that...
some temporal, you know, boundary here, but my question is, and this goes back to what Judge Chen raised in the first place, is there something in the rule that imposes some temporal bounds on this?
So the short answer is I'm not sure if the rule has that temporal limitation. Perhaps
the rule doesn't, but the question is maybe the VA manual does.
And again, the same answer, I'm not sure what the VA manual would speak to that or not. Perhaps what would check against that is the fact that these are all reviewed, and the appellate review would find that to be clear error when you're, I mean, cherry picking is, you know, very clear-cut example of clear error. But I think, and I think Your Honors know where I would go next, which is, you know, in this case, we're looking between 2010 and 2014, so we're not, like, backloading readings from 50 years ago in order to support this predominance. We're using the, you know, this four-slice period of time.
And just one last thing. These readings for history of diastolic pressure, those need to be readings without when the person's not taking any medication, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And that's why the window of time we're looking at is 2010 to 2014, because in April 2014 he began taking the medication.
Okay.
And if there are no further questions, Your Honor, we'd ask that you affirm the decision of the Veterans Court.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Niles, you have some time.
Thank you, Your Honors. As Your Honors' colloquy with my friend show, there is reasonable doubt here in terms of how to, first of all, interpret the regulatory term predominantly, which has legal significance, and then ties to this court's rulings in Tadlock, and Stinson, and Slaughter, and Deloach. Tadlock is a case that has roots in the Chenery Doctrine, where the agency's decision, right, has to come up with the agency's rationale, and that is, by and large, what is before the court reviewing the agency decision based on the agency's rationale. And here, when there is a blank space, instead of rationale in terms of what does predominantly mean, And then in consideration of that and the 10 pre-medication readings across 7 visits, only 3 of which happened with 2 or more readings on the same date, was that April 2021 examiner's opinion against a compensable, and it's an opinion, not a finding of fact, by the way. An examiner does not find facts. An examiner fills the role of a medical expert whose opinion has to comport with accurate factual and legal premise to hold any sway. Is that consistent, then, with the definition of predominantly? Your Honors were asking my friend about how far back, if this were in a hypothetical, 50 years of readings. The VA's internal policy manual is called the M21-1, and it does contain a provision that addresses when considering history of diastolic pressure. And the VA's internal policy manual says that VA should only consider blood pressure readings obtained when the veteran was undergoing a diagnostic evaluation for hypertension. And so here, again, you have these 10 readings from 7 visits. You have April 29th, 2010, with 2 readings of that day, one of which is, has diastolic of 100. That's appendix page 27. You have April 26th, 2011, with diastolic reading of 100 from a single reading that day. And then bookending 3 other below 100 is in February and April 2014. 2 different visits, each with 2 different readings, with diastolic pressure of at least 100 taken during those visits. And so then that bookending here, I would submit, further shows the reasonable possibility that on remand, when the board is filling this gap in the first instance, Mr. Pelt has at least a reasonable possibility of a better disposition than the denial that the board issued without addressing those pre-medication readings. Your Honors, once again, Mr. Pelt would respectfully request that this court vacate the Veterans Court's decision and remand.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Niles. The case is submitted.